Hi, I'm PJ Vogt, and I want to tell you about my podcast, Search Engine. We try to make sense of the world, one question at a time. No question too big, no question too small. We will even answer your questions if you send them in. Stuff like, what happens when a cemetery goes out of business? What should we do about teens using AI to do their homework? Who buys luggage at the airport luggage store? Follow and listen to Search Engine in partnership with Odyssey, wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome into After Hours on 96.5 The Fan. Logan Weber here with you. Jacob Mustard is alongside producing the program tonight. We're with you for the next 3 hours from 6 o'clock until 9 o'clock. And a lot to get to. We're going to talk primarily Royals baseball, obviously. A big week for the Royals, including the completion of a weekend series against the Padres on Sunday. So we'll be discussing that. A couple of big news and notes surrounding some Royals prospects. You know, I guess one or two prospects in particular. And then a couple of stories in regards to some former Royals turned minor leaguers that maybe playing themselves back into a position for consideration with the team in Kansas City. The end of phase one for MLB All-Star voting has been completed, and I have things to say about it. They will be soapboxy in nature, just giving you a fair bit of warning before we get there. We'll talk about, of course, Game 7 of the NBA Finals. Last night, the Oklahoma City Thunder beat the Indiana Pacers in fashion that nobody wanted to see happen. The Pacers not at full strength for the final three plus quarters of that game last night because of a horrible injury to Tyrese Halliburton. So we'll discuss all of that, maybe even look ahead a little bit to what next season looks like in the NBA, because it looks wildly different than the way it looks right now.
There was also a huge trade.
Huge trade over the weekend with a guy heading from the West Coast to, I guess, the Southwest. I don't know how you want to describe it. From Phoenix to Houston, we'll just say that. So big trades, big injuries that could have major implications across the league next year. We'll discuss that. Couple of stories surrounding the Kansas City Chiefs. Some that I find interesting, others that I do not. And we've been seeing a lot. It's that time of year, right? You've got baseball going on. The NBA Finals just wrapped up last night. So it is the season for hot takes. From about the second to last week or last week of June up through early August, you will hear the most outlandish things you will ever hear in regards to the NFL. And it's already started. You've got people throwing out some of the craziest predictions and prognostications, and I want to discuss those a little bit as well. Coming up at 7:30 during our program tonight, I will be replaying an interview with Jordan Foote, who has been covering the Chiefs and the Royals and the NBA and the NHL, whatever you think of sports-wise, he's covered it. And last Friday, I had an opportunity to host Fesco and Dusty. Both guys were off on Friday. So I was in, and I brought Jordan on to talk Kansas City Chiefs, talk about the off-season mini camp, and everything in between. So we'll be replaying that interview for you guys coming up at 7:30. Let's get things started tonight talking a little bit of Royals baseball. After a three-game sweep of the Rangers during the week last week, it was a three-game series against the Padres Friday, Saturday, Sunday, and the Royals picked up a win on Friday, game one of the series out in San Diego, winning it 6-5 with a big day for a couple of different players for this Royals team, scoring 6 runs on 11 hits, including a 3-hit day for both Mikel Garcia and Jonathan India. Bobby Witt Jr. hit a home run in the game, his 10th of the year. India ended up knocking out his 4th homer of the season. So Royals rocking a 4-game winning streak, and then things kind of drew to a halt after that. On Saturday, the Royals bats fell pretty silent, and the Royals end up losing 5-1 as Noah Cameron, with another really impressive start, he went 5 1/3 and gave up just 2 earned runs, but not enough as the Royals fall in that one. And then yesterday, it was a problematic walk-off loss for Kansas City, losing it 3-2. Royals, again, not a lot going on offensively. 7 hits as a team, including 2 from Bobby. Salvador Perez hit a 2-run home run, his 9th of the year, his 5th in the month of June. So he has more home runs now in the month of June than he did March, April, and May combined. You want to talk about the ebbs and flows of baseball, Salvador Perez showing you that to the nth degree. But it was late pitching for Dustin Lynch as he gave up an earned run in a third of an inning that ended up drawing the Royals the L 3-2. All in all, though, a good week for the Kansas City Royals. They went 4-2, including that 3-game sweep of the Rangers. They're now a couple games below 500, sitting at 38-40 after they were 34-38 going into the week. Things don't get any easier, though. After an off day today, they'll be back in action tomorrow at Kauffman for 3 games against the Rays and then 3 games against the Dodgers. So you want to talk about the difficulty of that, the 6-game stretch they just finished with the Rangers and the Padres. This one is even more difficult as we approach the end of the month of June. You know, talking about yesterday's game for the Royals, a lot of conversation, a lot of consternation, I guess you could say, about the decision or lack thereof for Matt Quatrero in the 9th inning. So he's got Lynch in there, Daniel Lynch in there. He's going, and they end up, Padres have runners on 2nd and 3rd, 1 out in the inning. And you have an opportunity then, because you currently do not have a force. Problem becomes, okay, you intentionally walk the batter, load the bases, and you've got a force out anywhere. Well, Q decides not to do that. What does it lead to? An infield grounder right to Bobby Witt Jr., which would have been a prime opportunity to turn a double play and get yourself out of the inning and send it to extras. Q decides not to intentionally walk the batter. It leads to that little dribbler up the middle, and Bobby has to try to make a spinning throw to home plate where there is not a force, and it ends up being kind of an errant throw. Catcher pulled off the bag. Walk-off winner, San Diego at home. Again, the hindsight's 20/20 in that situation, right? If I'm putting myself in the shoes of Matt Quatrero, that probably would have been where my mind went to, and I'm sure it did for Matt Quatrero as well, but I don't know. And it's hard for me to put the blame for yesterday's loss on Q and on the pitching when you only score 2 runs. When you score 2 runs in a game, you should lose. I mean, putting all this pressure on the Royals pitching staff game in, game. I mean, Seth Lugo threw a gem last night. 6 1/3, struck out 7. He gave up only 1 earned run on 2 hits, no walks. That's a phenomenal pitching performance by Seth Lugo, right? Angel Serpa struggled. He gave up an earned run on 2 walks, no hits. Urcig threw another great performance for him. And then Daniel Lynch, which I shouldn't say a great performance for Urcig because he gave up the run that was credited to Serpa after the 2 walks. So doesn't get an earned run on his stat line, but he does get a blown save. And then Lynch gives up 1 earned run. I don't know, man. I mean, our text line number, 913-586-7965. I got a 660 says, that was terrible coaching by Q to end the game. Love Q, but there's nothing you can say that makes sense there. I think, yeah, and especially when you look at who they had an opportunity to intentionally walk, a guy who is hitting the ball pretty well right now for San Diego. And you look at the guy hitting behind him who for his career is hitting like 207 against lefties and less than 200 against righties. When you throw Schreiber in there to end the game, I don't know, man. It's really, really hard, right? If you get the double play, which is what the Royals would have gotten had they intentionally walked and loaded the bases, with the way that ball was hit, it would have been a double play. Who knows if that's the case, right? They intentionally walk and load the bases, and then it ends up being a sacrifice fly 360 yards to deep right field. All right, ball game's over anyway. Whether it's runners on second and third and one out or the bases loaded and one out, your chances of losing the ball game are high. Very, very high. I put most of the onus for this game not on Matt Quatrero, not on Daniel Lynch or John Schreiber or the pitching staff for the Royals. You can't score two runs in a game and expect to win. I'm sorry. You can't do it. This is nothing new. Our offense has been the same all year. But it was better, was it not? I mean, outside of Sunday and Saturday, in that three-game series against the Rangers and in game one against the Padres, they were scoring 5-6 runs a game. That's great. That's going to win you a lot of ball games. Funny how that happens, right? The Royals score one run, two run, three runs five times, and they have a six-run game, and they go 4-2. In the two games they lost, the games they allowed, they only scored two runs and one run. Pretty simple. But for some reason, this Royals team, they have guys that can hit the baseball. I mean, Freddie Fermin is hitting nearly 260. Kyle Isbell's around 250. Drew Waters is hitting over 260. Salvador Perez is hitting much better in the month of June. Five home runs that I mentioned earlier, which is more than he had in the previous 3 months of play combined. Vinny Pasquantino, coming off of the American League Hitter of the Month in May, is now approaching, you know, he's been hovering around 270 overall for the year after the way he's hit the last 2 months. Mikel Garcia is hitting over 310. He's top 10 in Major League Baseball in batting average. Jonathan India has been better. Bobby Witt Jr. is hitting 285. But you can't score runs because you're the worst team in baseball hitting with runners in scoring position. Something's got to give, man. This is a playoff team. This is a playoff team. I'm not going to say this is a division winning team because the Detroit Tigers record wise are the best team in baseball. But this is a team, the way that they've played this season, the way the pitching has stacked up and the way that they hit when there's not runners on second and third, is a team that can win 90 plus games. But for some reason, you know, I don't know if it's the way that they're being pitched at. I don't know if it's the, you know, sort of maybe the pressure or the clutch of having a guy on second or third, 180 or 90 feet from scoring that changes the mindset. I'm not sure. But for some reason, when this team puts a runner on second or third, they drift a lot. Got a 913 in the text line says, it seems like it doesn't make sense to pull Lugo, but does it really matter if the boys don't score any more runs anyways in hindsight? If they score, I mean, if it's a 3-2 game there in the bottom of the ninth inning and that run goes, maybe Bobby's more likely to just throw the ball to first base and get you to two outs. Yeah, it's a tie ball game, but you've got extras coming up. I don't know, man. It's tough. I got an 816 says the sample size is over half a season so far. Can't do it over three or four games. I agree. They hit the ball better earlier in the week, but then kind of reverted back to the median, right? Back to the way that they've hit all year. I think the moves are coming. I really do. I think based off of the way that JJ Piccolo has approached things as a general manager so far in his career in Kansas City, he's never been one to shy away from a deal, whether it was early on in his tenure where the Royals were in a position to be sellers versus last year when they were more buyers. And he looked at where the Royals needed the most help. And at that point, it was relief pitching. And they covered that in spades. And then they did it again in the offseason. Now it's about the bats, man. Something's got to give with this Royals team. You know, I spent part of my weekend last week watching old Royals baseball highlights. Like I go on YouTube and I typed in, you know, 2014, 2015 Royals baseball highlights. And there's like these 2-3 hour long videos of both Royals postseason runs. And this team, it's hard to try to say that, you know, this team needs to be more like those teams, because those 2014-15 Royals teams were unlike anything that baseball has seen in quite a long time, right? They didn't hit home runs. They didn't have the most dominant starting pitching staff. But what they did have was a team that hit with a tremendous amount of contact. They were the fastest team in baseball. They had the best defense in baseball. And they had the best bullpen in baseball, right? HDH, baby. Waiter, check, please. If the Royals were leading going into the seventh inning, the game was over. I just think that this team has somehow, this team has similar power to those 14 and 15 teams. They don't hit a lot of home runs, but they're much slower, right? Outside of Bobby and Mikel Garcia, this team doesn't blaze the base paths, right? Vinny's not very fast. Salvi has never been very fast. Drew Waters and Kyle Isbell aren't going to be guys that are going to steal 30, 40 bases and get from first to home on a double in the gap. You know, it just, I don't know. This team has elite starting pitching and a pretty good bullpen. In fact, I would say a very good bullpen when you look at Urcig and Estevez and Steven Cruz and, you know, other guys on this pitching staff with Lynch and Taylor Clark, and the list goes on and on with these guys. It doesn't make sense that this team is only sitting at two games below 500 and is currently on the outside looking in of a wild card berth as we approach the halfway point of the season. Just when runners put themselves on second or third base, the bats shut down. And I don't know if the All-Star break is needed to try to turn this whole thing around, because that's kind of what happened with the 2014 Royals. You know, they were off to a pretty ho-hum kind of a start in 2014. And then at the All-Star break, things flipped on a dime and they became what they inevitably became. I don't think that the way that this Royals team is constructed right now is going to be the exact same team we will see in August and September. I think that a bat or two could arrive in Kansas City to try to help this team with a postseason push, whether it's in the next couple of weeks here or post All-Star break as we approach the July 31st trade deadline. Again, our text line number, 913-586-7965 is our number. You're listening to After Hours, Logan Weber alongside Jacob Mustard. We've got a little bit more Royals conversation to get to, as well as I am angry about the All-Star voting in Major League Baseball, and I'll let some of that venting out when we come back right here on 96.5 The Fan.
Looking for something smart, soulful, and full of heart? I'm Jen Hatmaker, host of For the Love, the podcast where we talk about what really matters. Love and family, faith and purpose. Every week, I'm joined by incredible guests for honest conversations that invite all of us to live with more intention, more laughter, and more connection. Join us on For the Love wherever you get your podcasts.
Boy, I really thought that after a 4-2 week from the Kansas City Royals that maybe fans would be a little bit more upbeat about this team. I guess that's not the case. After Hours here on 96.5 The Fan, Logan Weber alongside producer Jacob Mustard. And, you know, some of these text line numbers, man, it's crazy. Somebody says, if we're waiting for the All-Star break to see a change, then this team is lost. This team is nowhere near as good as the 2014 team. This team would get destroyed by the 2015 team. Hell, this team got destroyed by the Chicago White Sox and the cityless Athletics. Let me break this down point by point. If we're waiting, the first part, if we're waiting for the All-Star break to see a change, then this team is lost. And the season is lost, is what this person says. Well, that's simply not true. Three teams that made the postseason last year were under 500 at the All-Star break. I don't see why we're panicking. Last year, you had three teams, the Astros, the Mets, and the Tigers, all hit Memorial Day last year with records under 500. All three ended up making the postseason. And so I think we need to relax on that for just a minute. This team is nowhere near as good as the 2014 team and would get destroyed by the 2015 team. Yeah, I'm not going to dispute that those two teams were certainly better than this Royals team is. I would say top to bottom. I mean, when you have an infield and an outfield that those Royals teams had, you know, Alex Gordon, arguably the best fielding left fielder ever. You had Lorenzo Cain in center field, a guy who could hit 300, he could hit 20 home runs, steal 30 bases, and a gold glove caliber player in center field. I mean, he finished third in the MVP voting in 2015. And then in right field, you had this revolving door of really, really good contributors. You know, like Nori Aoki comes out of nowhere, and Alex Rios doing a great job with the bat. And then when the Royals wanted to, hey, let's move Lorenzo Cain out to right field. We'll play Jerrod Dyson in center and have arguably the best outfield fielding wise, possibly in the history of Major League Baseball. And then you look at the infield with Mike Moustakas, Eric Hosmer, and Alcides Escobar at first, short, and third, and then Omar Infante doing his thing in second base with Salvador Perez, who became Salvador Perez, catching. Yeah, that team's better than this team is. Those two teams certainly were. This team would get, got destroyed by the Chicago White Sox and the cityless Athletics. This is, they lost two out of three to the Chicago White Sox. They swept them in a four-game series a month and a half ago. They're 5-2 against the White Sox this year. Let's not sit here and act like the Royals have a losing record against the Chicago White Sox, like they're 2-5 against the White Sox. That's not the case. Let's not have selective amnesia over this Royals season and act like that. You know, those two out of three against the White Sox are the only three games they've played against Chicago. They swept them in a four-game series back in early June. Late May, I guess I should say. I don't understand somebody else. I don't understand this thought that we are going to trade for someone. Who out there is so much better than Drew Waters or Kyle Isbell that you want to trade Seth Lugo for? Because those are the only two guys that you're going to replace in a trade. I just don't understand it. Well, I don't think that, I mean, who's to say Seth Lugo's the guy, right? I don't know if Seth Lugo is potentially who you trade. It might be Drew Waters or Kyle Isbell that you end up training. I think it's more likely that it would be Waters than Kyle Isbell, because Isbell is one of the best gloves in center field in all of baseball, and you need a guy like that. I don't know about Lugo being the guy that you trade in that situation. Could be a combination of Waters and Michael Lorenzen, for argument's sake. Or maybe it's Kyle Wright, right, who's finishing up a rehab assignment, could be due to come back to baseball here soon. If you want to keep the six-man rotation, quote-unquote, that you've got right now with Reagan's coming back, and then you've got Reagan's, Lugo, Waka, Bubich, Cameron, and then Lorenzen, who you can use in kind of a long relief situation, or if you feel like, you know, Reagan's or Lugo or even Noah Cameron needs a day off here or there. So I don't know if Lugo is necessarily the guy. Lugo has, 1 year left. It is an option year for him next season. Trading Seth Lugo feels like you'd have to trade him to another contender. And that's a sell scenario. I don't think you're going to trade Seth Lugo for another MLB-ready player right now. Lugo is a prospect sort of a trade. I don't think the Royals are sellers right now. So I wouldn't lean towards Seth Lugo being the guy that they trade. Da-da-da-da-da. Going down here a little bit further. L-Dub, you said it might be some moves coming. Who would you trade? Well, I just threw out a couple of names, right? If you're looking for a bat, it's likely going to be a corner outfielder or a DH. And with that, you have to think about, okay, who's the guy that's leaving the lineup day to day? Well, it's not going to be Bobby. It's not going to be Mikel. It's not likely to be Salvi or Vinny or Jack, for that matter. So you're looking at, okay, center field, left field. All right. Well, between Isbell and Waters, if you were to trade one, it would likely be, in my view, Drew Waters. He's got a little bit less MLB experience than Isbell does. You know, Isbell, while he's not hitting the ball great here in the month of June, he is hovering around 250, which is great. Kyle Isbell is in center field because of what he provides defensively, not because of what he does at the plate, right? I think it's similar in some ways. I'm not saying they're the exact same player or that Kyle Isbell is as talented, but it feels like it's similar to what the Royals did with Alex Gordon for years and years, right? Gordo had good years at the plate, but he also had some rough years at the plate. He was in the lineup every day because if you hit a ball to left field, it was very, very difficult for that thing to come down and not be in Alex Gordon's glove when it did. That's kind of what Kyle Isbell is there for. So I would see somebody like a Drew Waters. And then I look at prospects for this Royals team, right? Who are the top guys in the Royals system right now? Well, Jack Caglione, number one on the list, of course. Blake Mitchell at two. Carter Jensen, three. Well, Carter Jensen has been hitting the cover off the ball in AA this year at Northwest Arkansas, and actually earlier today got the call up to AAA. So he's now in Omaha, very, very close to making the major league roster. Jensen, you know, Kansas City native. He's a Park Hill South grad. Very, very, I mean, he's, what, 21? He's about to turn 22, I think, the day before the 4th of July. He's only 14, 16 months older than Blake Mitchell. Could the Royals move on from Blake Mitchell? Because Carter Jensen and Blake Mitchell can't both be the Royals catcher of the future. You only have one. And to have two guys in the top five of your system at the same position, maybe one of, you know, maybe Blake Mitchell is a guy that you could see move on. I am still of the belief that Gavin Cross could be an option. He's 24, coming up on 25 years old. He's been hovering around minor league baseball for quite a long time, and he is having a rough go of it in AA this year. He is hitting 185 with a 227 on base percentage in 57 games. In 232 at-bats, he has 43 hits to 71 strikeouts. Not sure what his trade value is going to be on the open market, but as a former top 100 prospect who is really, really bogged down with outfield opportunities with the Kansas City Royals, with Cags getting moved to right field, Waters having a good year, Isbell having a good year, and other guys that they've brought, you know, Nick Lofton and Jonathan India's played some left field. I just don't think the opportunity is there for Gavin Cross this season or even next season to try to make this major league roster. So could we see Gavin Cross be on the move at the deadline? Javier Vaz is another one that could potentially be on the move. And then what about the bullpen? I mean, I threw out so many names for this Royals bullpen that have had great years this year. Steven Cruz has been awesome. Schreiber has been okay. Taylor Clark was really, really good up until about the last week and a half, 2 weeks, where he's really struggled. He's given up 12 earned runs this year, nine of them in the last four or five appearances for him. But prior to that, Taylor Clark was really good. Lucas Ersig has been awesome. Carlos Estevez leads Major League Baseball in saves right now. Could we see Lucas Ersig move? And you set up, okay, we have a different setup guy. We have a different eighth inning high leverage guy because Ersig is going to have pretty good value at the deadline. There are options for this Royals team that don't include a Seth Lugo or something of that nature. And I threw out some of the prospect names because if you're looking for a team that's selling at the deadline, typically, quite often, they're looking to create depth. They're looking for younger guys, prospects, or fringe MLB-ready guys to try to rewrite the ship. They're in rebuild mode. If the Royals are buyers at the deadline, I think it's far more likely you see depth pieces or prospects move rather than big name players. A guy like Seth Lugo, and I know somebody had mentioned possibly even Carlos Estevez. His value is going to be extremely high at the deadline, but if you're a team trying to make the playoffs, trading away a guy like that is hard. Somebody's rather upset. All you talk about is who you are going to get rid of. Who in the hell do you think they're going to get? Handful of names. I've consistently mentioned Kyle Stowers with the Miami Marlins. Corner outfielder, he can DH. He hits for good enough average. He hits for good power. He drives in runs. He's got a solid OBP. A former Royal in the form of Ryan O'Hearn is always an interesting name. He's getting thrown around a lot. I've heard Eugenio Suarez as another name. We'll talk about him a little bit later on because I saw an article today that mentioned him, but the headline of the article was awful and was getting a lot of flack on social media. So Eugenio Suarez is a name that I've seen thrown around quite a bit. There are guys out there that the Royals could go after, right? Taylor Ward with the Los Angeles Angels, although I would be unexcited, I guess, sort of meh about a move for Ward because, yeah, he's hit 20 home runs and he's driven in 40 RBI. He's hitting barely above 200. Like, yeah, I know you're looking for power and you're looking for a guy to drive in runs, but a dude hitting barely over the Mendoza line doesn't excite me. Not even a little bit. We're going to take a break. We ran kind of long on that segment. 913-586-7965 is our number. But don't you fret. We're going to go back to the text line when we come back. A lot of Royals conversation, a lot of people with some interesting things to say. We'll continue to discuss on the other side of this break. After Hours on 96.5 The Fan. Logan Weber alongside producer Jacob Mustard, your home for Kansas City sports.
How We Made Your Mother is a rewatch podcast that looks back episode by episode at the hit TV show How I Met Your Mother. It's hosted by me, Josh Radnor, along with series co-creator and my friend Craig Thomas.
Follow How We Made Your Mother wherever you get your podcasts.
Talking Royals baseball here on After Hours on 96.5 The Fan, your home for Kansas City sports. It's Logan Weber here with you alongside producer Jacob Mustard. And a lot of you guys getting involved in the text line right now, 913-586-7965. Talking about, you know, prospects, trade deadline, moves the Royals could make and who they would trade for, those sorts of things. It's interesting. Somebody says the guy that who do you want them to do at the play? I don't even know what that's supposed to say. Ryan O'Hearn. Do we want Ryan O'Hearn back? I don't. Guy's hitting 300. He's playing on a really bad Orioles team. I feel like they would definitely be willing to do that. The only way this team is making trades is as a seller. Find something to make you happy, dude. I mean, the negativity is just out of this world right now. Same person says, Suarez for prospects, a contending team is going to trade away a guy with 20-something home runs and the most RBIs for a prospect or two or seven. That's Lugo. And then where are you going to play this guy? Because he's an infielder. All we need is a fifth DH. Okay, you raise a good point with Eugenio Suarez in a trade with the Royals for prospects. I think that that's probably unlikely. Very unlikely. You're right, because Eugenio Suarez, he's hitting like 250, but guy's got 25 homers, and he's leading Major League Baseball with 67 ribbies. On a Diamondbacks team that really has some great pieces with, you know, Corbin Carroll and Josh Naylor, Ketel Marte, who's been battling injuries but is hitting 310. So that's a fair point. I think that they would have to probably get rid of some MLB-ready guys, probably a pitcher or two. I really don't think the Royals are going to be willing to part with Seth Lugo. Not with the way he's pitching, not with the leadership that he provides at the top of this Royals rotation. But you say, like, where is he going to play? Where is Eugenio Suarez going to play? Well, thankfully, I didn't have to think about this. That would be Royals review. It's a fair, the article itself makes some good points, makes a lot of sense. The problem is that the headline of the article is bad. It is. That's the beauty and the curse of a headline, is it can kill a story if it's not well said. The headline of the article is, Mikel Garcia is having a fine year, but he's not the long-term solution at third base. Basically saying like, oh, Mikel Garcia is not great forever. What? Okay, but then you get into the article, and basically the suggestion is, hey, the Royals can maybe move Mikel Garcia to second base, and if they want to get Eugenio Suarez or somebody at third base, then you're good there. But the headline of it is sort of like what they're talking negatively about Mikel Garcia, which makes absolutely no sense. So, you know, just I agree with you, though, that Suarez for prospects doesn't make a lot of sense for a Diamondbacks team that just won a World Series a couple years ago. The guy is going to have a sky high market value. I'm not super into the whole Eugenio Suarez to the Royals thing. That's something that I've seen thrown around by a lot of people in the media in regards to Major League Baseball. I've more been focused on like the, as I said earlier, the Kyle Stowers, you know, maybe even a Ryan O'Hearn, although I'm not jumping for joy at that possibility either. I don't know what it's been about Kyle Stowers, but I've just been very interested in what he's done so far this year for a Marlins team that is always very, very willing to part ways with guys before they reach the end of, you know, their service years and all those sorts of things. Somebody else, another person in the text line says, Lucas Ursig has not been good this year, but is clearly battling an injury or two. I think this Royals team can hit. They did it last year. They just need an extra bat. Jonathan India was supposed to be much better than this, which has sucked, but he is, for some reason, still leading off. Love hearing from you guys. Thanks for filling the airwaves. Well, Jonathan India was not brought to Kansas City to hit. Jonathan India was brought to Kansas City to get on base, right? I'm taking the money ball approach here. When Jonathan India got to Kansas City, he was a career 250 or so hitter, right? He's hitting close to 240 this year. His on-base percentage is, at the moment, sitting at 315. Which is well below his career average of up over 350 if you don't count his time in Kansas City. So I think that he was brought here not to be a guy that hits 270, 280 at the top of the order. He's supposed to be a guy that can just get on base for you. That's his job at the top of the order. And it has worked in spots. It hasn't worked in other spots. To say that Lucas Ursig has been bad this year, I gotta say, I pretty strongly disagree with that. In 28 and two-thirds of an inning, he's got a 2-2 ERA. That's elite. A 2-2 ERA is elite. That is all-star level. He had to kind of change roles. He came to Kansas City as a reliever. They made him the closing pitcher. He did well in limited opportunities late in the year. And now he's back to being kind of that eighth inning, you know, clutch sort of hold position guy. And he's been good. 29 games he's pitched in. He's given up 7 earned runs. I don't see where we're saying that Lucas Ursig is bad. I don't know. Moving Garcia to second for a third baseman is a no-go. That would basically negate the Singer India trade and would mean we gave up a solid pitcher for nothing. Yeah, I mean, you'd have to sort of use Jonathan India as a utility, I guess. Throw him out at second base, left field on days, right field if Cags needs a day off. I don't know. It doesn't make a lot of sense to do it that way. I think this Royals team's got to do something, man. Got a 913 here. We'll take a break here in just a second. I got a 913 says, by the way, I looked this up. If you want a comparison for the 2025 Royals, it's the 2000 team. Witt, Garcia, Vinny, and Kags is the latest version of Damon, Dye, Beltran, Randa, and Sweeney. That 2000 team finished with 77 wins, which is around the neighborhood in for this 2025 team. We'll have give or take one or two games. I think they're better than 77 wins, man. I mean, firstly, because the starting pitching, or really the pitching in general, is much better in 2025 than that 2000 team had. So that's going to add some win value to your baseball team. I don't know. It's going to be a hot button issue for the next month, guaranteed, month plus, as we approach the trade deadline on July 31st. I still think they'll make a move. I really do. I really do. 913-586-7965 is our number. After Hours with Logan Weber and Jacob Mustard here on 96.5 The Fan. Closing out hour number one of this Monday night edition of After Hours. Logan Weber alongside Jacob Mustard. And I got a couple of stories regarding the Kansas City Royals here to close out hour number one. The first, and I mentioned it briefly in the last segment, Carter Jensen, the Royals' number three prospect in their system behind only Blake Mitchell and, of course, Jack Caglione, has gotten the call to Omaha. The 21-year-old will be joining the AAA club this week. After a really, really good year in Northwest Arkansas, in 68 games, he hit .292 with a .360 on base percentage. I will say slugging numbers a little bit down. He's never been known as a massive power bat by any means. Last year in 126 games between high A and double A, he hit 18 home runs. So far this year, he's only hit six, but he has got 80 hits. He's got nine doubles, four triples, six homers. He's got drawn 30 walks this year, and he's got pretty good fielding stats as well. A little bit undersized, I guess you could say, for a traditional catcher. He's 6 foot 210, but he'll tower over Freddie Fermin, who is certainly very, very small for a catcher in the league. But it brings up an interesting point, and one that I was having a text conversation with a listener about earlier. Blake Mitchell is your number two prospect, 20-year-old catcher. Your number three prospect is Carter Jensen, a 21-year-old, about to be 22-year-old catcher, who just got the call to AAA. Both of those guys have done nothing but catch and DH since they joined the Royals organization. Something's got to give. And I don't know if that means that one of these guys could be traded away for a bat. I don't know. Or I think we could see one of them make a change, right? Jack Caglione just moved to right field primarily. He'll still play first base some, but primarily as a right fielder now because that's what the Royals need. Vinny Pasquantino having a great year so far. He's 27, 28 years old. So he still has some time, still has some value left in his career. But you could begin to try to groom one of these two guys, whether it be Mitchell or Jensen. I would say probably more Mitchell because Jensen seems much more MLB ready at this point. Try to make Blake Mitchell a first baseman. Still keep him available to catch if you want to, right? I just think that you have to try to do something because you can't leave both of these guys at catcher and then 2-3 years down the line, both of these guys are major league ready and they play the same position. They're both too talented to be having one of them riding the bench for the other when they need an off day. It just doesn't work, I don't think. Second story I have is one that I don't know how much there is to it, but Kevin Biggio, Royals picked him up early in the season, like during spring training this year. It's sort of like a minor league deal. It's sort of like, oh, that could be interesting. Got off to an incredibly slow start with the Royals this year. He was hitting just .164 in 83 plate appearances. So he gets sent down to AAA and hitting the ball pretty well in Omaha. He, in 20 games so far in Omaha, 20 games played, 82 plate appearances. He's hitting .310. He's got two home runs, 12 RBIs. He's got an on-base percentage at .390. .390. So could we see Kevin Biggio get the call back up at some point? He's already been with the major league team this year. You've already wasted, you know, he's already, the option's already wasted. Why not try to give a guy like that another opportunity? We'll see. The Royals obviously need hitting, and I'm sure they'll try to find it any way, shape, or form. Hour number two of After Hours is coming your way next. Logan Weber alongside producer Jacob Mustard. I want to talk about the All-Star voting in Major League Baseball. I procrastinated it long enough. I think it's dumb, and I think something needs to change, and I'll tell you why coming up next, right here on 96.5 The Fan, your home for Kansas City sports.
Every week on the Moth Podcast, you'll hear true stories that will intrigue you, inspire you, and make you laugh.
He said, is there anything in your diet that might be spiking your blood sugar? I said, sometimes I eat pizza until I'm unconscious. He said, I think that might be it.
For real stories live on stage from comedians, astronauts, accountants, farmers, and people just like you, follow and listen to The Moth wherever you get your podcasts.